Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Advanced Kayak Angler Podcast. We appreciate you tuning in from wherever you do that from, podcasts, YouTube, Facebook. If you do it through podcasts, please go ahead and like and give us a review. That would be awesome. And also, now we did a little deal with our friends over at Catch Products, Catch Outdoors. You can go to their website. And you can use the promo code BKB for Bass Kayak and Beers 5. It's 5%, not a whole lot, but let's be honest, you're going to buy their stuff anyways because it's awesome. And friends of the show, they've got awesome metal track. Like, we're going to be talking about electronics tonight. So electronics mounts for the front. If you're trying to dial your gear in perfectly, they got the product for you. Hobie, Old Town, Bonafide. I know that new the power boat they're coming out with all kind of cool stuff for that. So go check them out. And we appreciate you. And if you leave a Google review at the end of each quarter, so every 3 months, whoever leaves us a review, we'll go back and we'll look at them. And we're going just randomly, we're going to choose one person who left a Google review. I'm saying if you do like one star and you say Dan's and, you know, you don't like Dan, I'm probably not going to put you in and drawing. But yeah, I mean, as long as it's a decent review and you don't hate our guts, you're listening to us, I guess you would. But we'd appreciate that. But at the end of each quarter, we're going to do a prize and a giveaway and we'll send it right to your house with some great Catch products because you need them anyways. You got to have the board. So there you go. Kurt, what's up, dude?
Man, really, it's cold here in Ohio, so there's not a lot going on, man. It's really cold here, so I'm just happy that we're going to be talking about electronics, man. I am super excited about this. I have a lot of ideas and thoughts about it running around in my head like a little squirrel cage, so I'm pumped about tonight.
Yeah, I mean, you're one of the most savvy electronics anglers in the game. I'm okay. Like, you know, I have two graphs and the whole deal, so I'm kind of stepping it up a little bit this year. But yeah, we got these two people have the craziest setups in the game, so we had to have them on. Casey Reed, Jake Anglers, how y'all doing, guys?
Good, doing good.
I'm doing pretty good. Good to see you guys. Cool.
Yeah, appreciate y'all being on. Casey, I've had you on the show before Kurt joined, but Jake, haven't had you on the show. Tell everybody who you are, man.
My name is Jake Angelus. I live in southern New Hampshire. I've been competitive kayak fishing since I was 15. Now I'm 22. Still been competing every single year and just loving it. Loving every minute of it.
Heck yeah. And if you're listening to us, he's wearing a Scope and Hope hat. So, you know, this man's into that forward facing. Sonar. All right. So we're talking about electronics. It seems like, I don't even know, like the trend is everybody on the Elite Series side and the big boat side, like it's a complete arms race of people going like Fujita. He's got five forward-facing transducers. People are going all out this year, more than ever. We'll start with you, Jake. We'll just start with what you have on your kayak, and then we'll kind of branch out from there.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm running three units right now. I'm running a Humminbird Helix 10. That's running solely 360 and Lake Master chip. I'm running a Garmin 1022 GPS map. That's running solely LiveScope. LVS 34 transducer mounted on a Sniper Marine pole. And then I'm running a Lowrance HDS Live 9. That unit does my side scanning, all my waypoint management. And I just keep all my waypoints on there. And that platform works for me, the Lowrance platform. It's super easy to adjust. I can write a little bit longer notes in there. And I like all the symbols they have. I really like the symbols in the Lowrance stuff. And
Jake, can I interrupt you real quick? What are you using the Humminbird for?
Mega 360.
Exclusively?
And Lake Master, yes.
In Lake Master, okay. So you're using a little bit of mapping, but mostly 360. Okay. I just wanted to clarify in my head, man. You got three different units from three different companies, man. So I was just trying to
a little bit of best of
exactly what you're doing with
it. A little bit of best of everything. I like I didn't want to stick to one brand. Every brand does something a little bit differently. So pull the strengths from every brand and really just build an awesome setup. And it all works for me.
Heck yeah. Casey, how about you, man? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kurt.
I just have to know how big a battery.
I'm running a single 100 amp hour, but you could do it all off of 50 amp hour.
You could do all that off of 50.
Yeah, each graph pulls about 12 amp hours for a whole tournament. So right about a 50.
Yeah.
I run a single 100 as a backup to my other 100 for my trolling motor. So if I make long runs and run out of battery, I can just swap over to another backup 100.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Casey, how about you, man?
Yeah, so I don't have a ton of upgrades from last year. The things I am upgrading is I'm moving from the Helix to the Solix, and I'm going from 10s to 12s. So I'll have two Solix 12s stacked, just very similar to how I had the Helixes mounted before, you know, kind of right on the right-hand side rail. I had the Mega 360 and the Mega Live last year, so we'll be running that again. And then I changing the battery setup. I did a little bit. I had four 23 amp hours ran together in parallel last year. This year, I'm going to be running six of them, but I'm running them all in two battery banks. My thought behind that is I'm going to get more voltage to each one of my graphs instead of running them all off of like one power source. Should be good. I almost got it completely rigged out now, just waiting on to wire a couple last things up. But really looking forward to these Solixes, and you know, I've never messed with them before, but that, you know, they updated them last year or 2 years ago, and you know, they put more processor speed in there, and I think it's just going to be awesome, and especially to have that touch screen now too.
Now, do you have them stacked on top of each other, or do you have them stacked out on the rail?
Well, they're on the gunnel basically. I have one kind of mounted just barely above the gunnel, and then one mounted right above that. I have that on a ram mount behind it. They're right next to, or the mounts are right next to each other, but the way they're positioned are basically on top of each other.
On top, like, so when you're looking at them, it'd be one.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're running autopilot, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Is that working with, you have it tied in with your fish finders, so it's, you can take advantage of some of the features that way?
So no, unfortunately, the autopilots are iPilot and not, I'm going to get my terminology wrong. There's another level of it. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but it needs to be the other one to be able to link the hummingbirds with the motor. And that'll get you you'll be able to go in there and kind of control your motor and tell it what to do. But yeah, unfortunately that's not available on the autopilots.
Maybe in the new, it's been out for like, what, 3-4 years now? So maybe whenever they come out with an update, mm-hmm. that'll be one of them.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something they're going to move towards in the future. I mean, I think the autopilot's done really well for Old Town, and yeah. I just see, you know, some good upgrades coming to that in the future.
The sky's the limit. I think they've kind of, it seems like that for just a motor-only platform, they're the standard now. There's a lot, you know, Hobie, you have the pedal and motor, but motor only, that's, I mean, I think in everybody's eyes, that's the deal now. Well, yeah, I'm sorry, it's just Bonafide. I don't mean to put down Bonafide because they, you know, they make an excellent track too. I don't, not to upset anybody, don't Google review me there. It's awesome kayak too.
I mean, it is what it is. All the kayak manufacturers, you know, all the major ones, they have great kayaks out there. It's all individual based. Like, you know, one person's going to like one kayak versus another, and it's all going to depend on what you do with it, how you use it. I mean, having the pedals and the motor, I mean, that's great for a lot of people. I mean, for me personally, I just like the ease of having the motor built on already. You just drop it in. It works like a bow mount without having the actual bow mount, and it's just plug and play. It's just always ready to go.
Yeah. I think that's the neatest thing about it, is that it's plug and play. You know, yeah. there's no rigging.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause some people really love rigging. Like, I enjoy doing it, you know, when I have time to do it. But when you don't have time to do it, or you're not comfortable doing it, or you're just not handy, man, people don't want to do that. People just, you know, they want to get the battery, they want to put it in the back and plug it in and go. They don't want to. So
that's. Yeah, I mean, I think that's I love the rigging aspect of it, but having the motor there, it's the motor head doesn't sit up as high as it does on most bow mounts that I've seen. There's even advantages to it as far as, you know, not just having to rig it yourself, you know, because like I said, I love rigging, and, you know, I'd be one that would do it, but I obviously don't need to with the autopilot, but it has its advantages as well.
Yeah. And Jake, what kind of kayak are you in?
I'm in the Nukanoo Unlimited.
Okay. So see, I stepped right in, didn't I? Yeah. I wouldn't. Yeah. I was thinking that was motor only because it has the motor in it. I wasn't thinking. Yeah. You add the motor, obviously. And Kurt, tell everybody, we'll go around the horn. Yeah, Kurt, you have all the electronics. Tell everybody what you have too.
Well, I mean, I'm a Garmin guy right now, so I got two Garmin units. I got the Ultra 10-inch up top, and then I got the 9-inch below it set up. And I use two forward-facing sonar transducers, you know, one set in perspective, one set in forward, so I can just hit a button and switch right between the two of them. There seems to be a lot of confusion when people ask me about that for some reason. Like, they're like, so how do you switch between them? And I'm just like, just hit the button. You know, there's like some confusion, like you can't just hit the button and switch between them. It's just like another screen on there. So I like it. And there's been a few times where I've actually had them, because they're all networked together, where I've used it when I was fishing these submerged trees that were running from about 18, 20 feet up to the surface. And they came within like 6 inches of the surface. So I had one in perspective mode and one in forward mode, so I could see the fish swimming around the tops of the trees. And then I could look right down at the bottom of the base of the tree and see if there were any fish down there or anywhere in the column. So it was a really cool perspective to be able to see that much of the water column all at once, you know, and that's something I've just recently rigged up. So it was new to me when I saw that. But so that's what I'm running. I feel like it's a little simple compared to your guys' units, especially like Jake's. How do you have your, I can't envision having three head units on your kayak. Can you like tell me how you have those set up?
Yeah. So I have it on two units mounted on a dashboard, which goes directly across. And then I have my third unit tucked under my dashboard off the floor of my kayak, because I have a track that goes right down the middle of the Nukanoo Unlimited. So I just mount my last unit on the track. And then I have through-hole ports on each side where all my wiring comes out. And then it runs through a power harness. So I have basically like a homemade C-Clear power harness inside my kayak, which runs all the way to the back to 100 amp hour. So it's just plug that 100 amp in. I get super good voltage throughout my whole kayak through that power harness, and it just makes the pictures and perfect voltage all day. No problems.
Now, when you say power harness, what do you mean? Like, is it something special other than like heavy duty wiring, or?
It's like it's 8-gauge wire running into it's almost like a little block, like a metal block that then you feed all your positives and your negatives into it. So it gives it really good power all the way up to the front.
Wow. 8-gauge. That's pretty stout.
Yeah.
That 8-gauge is, I mean, I'm not an expert on wiring and all that stuff. I've learned a lot over the years, but I've been running 8-gauge on all my batteries, and to not necessarily all the way to the graphs, but when I run the batteries together, when I run them in parallel into the power blocks, 8 gauge is always what I use. And wow. I literally just bought 2 25-foot rolls of 8 gauge, and I have about, I'd say about 8 feet left of it. So I hate to think about how much that wire weighs altogether. Oh, that's in there, but there's a lot of 8 gauge wire running through the boat now.
Yeah, I think it's the only way to go is that 8 gauge wire. It's just such good stuff.
Yeah,
I thought I was like running heavy duty stuff at 10 gauge. I was like, man, I'm running really big stuff at 10 gauge, and you guys are running 8 gauge. It just shows you too that the more sophisticated electronics, you know, you want to get them clean energy. Right. You want to get them clean voltage. You don't want any voltage drop in there because that's what degrades the signal the most with a lot of setups. Because I have people, you know, I know you guys have probably talked to a lot of different people, but, you know, I've had a few people contact me. And they're just like, I'm not, you know, my setup is just not looking good like yours. And they had the exact one. They had an Ultra just like mine. They had the 34 just like mine, and they just couldn't get it looking right. And after going back and forth with one of the guys, and I figured it out, I'm like, and he was running like, what was it, like 16 gauge wire or something, you know? And he had his battery. It was all the way in the back of his kayak, so it was running like 12 feet, you know, which is a long ways for a kayak run, not necessarily a boat, but long ways for a kayak run. And as soon as he upped the gauge to 10 gauge, instant. Clean signal, no interference anymore. No, all this weird stuff he was experiencing all went away. And just to hear you guys say it, because I don't get to talk to a lot of guys that have really sophisticated systems like you guys do. It's good to hear, man. You know, it just shows you how important that is. Sorry, I didn't mean to like.
Yeah, all these electronics are very power hungry, and they need all that voltage you can feed them. You know, I'm very familiar with Hummingbird, but not too much the other brands, but I know I'm pretty sure they're similar, and the, you know, they can run up to, I think it's like 20 volts basically. So most people are running them off of 12 volt batteries. Yeah. So, but they can accept up to, I think it may be 18 or something. I could be wrong, but it's like 18 or 20 volts that they can accept. So I really want to figure out a way to get a 24 volt battery and limit the voltage a little bit on it. And so I can run as much, you know, that 18 to 20 volts to those graphs and really see what the difference is going to be. Cause I can almost guarantee you're going to get clearer images on, you know, around the board with that.
I actually talked to a local guy to me, Steve Estes with Bass Fishing Electronics. He's about 30 minutes from my house, and he installs and does a lot of professionals' boats for a living. And he was talking to me about how that he doesn't believe in that 16 volt system. He's seen a lot of units get fried up from running too much voltage to them. And he's done it on his boat, and he said he didn't notice a very big difference that was worth frying up units for.
Really?
Yeah. He said that 13 and 14 volts.
Yeah, I mean, if it's going to fry units.
Yeah.
It's not cheap. If it's going to mess something up, it's definitely not worth it. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I always wonder.
He won't install that either. He won't install it in his shop, a 16 amp hour battery. Because
interesting.
Certain companies are coming out with them now. Yeah. I've seen it all over the Garmin pages, people talking about running 16 volts.
Constantly. It's constantly on the Garmin pages.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's unrelenting on the Garmin pages, which is interesting, too, because like if you do talk to Garmin, they regulate it back down. Mm-hmm. Like it comes in at 20, but it gets regulated back down. I forget what it is. It's like 13 something or whatever the technician guy was telling me. So he's like, it doesn't make any difference. He's like,
that's what my local guy was telling me about too. He says it still gets regulated down.
Yeah. For the Garmin units. Yeah. You know, I don't know about Hummingbird. I don't know about Lowrance. You know, I have like almost no experience with those guys as far as with this.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard all that too, but I've also heard of people saying that it does make a difference. So, like, it's mm-hmm. it's one of those things where I guess you gotta either risk it and try it to see for yourself, or just take the word of whoever. But it's definitely interesting and something I definitely want to learn more about in the next year or two.
Like, any advantage we can squeeze out of these things, man. That's what I'm always interested in. And, you know, when I hear these things, I'm like, is this real? Is this something like I'm going to be able to like apply to what I'm doing to be able to get a little bit more performance? Cause I mean, that's what we're all looking for, right? With having multiple fish finders and having these nice setups, is getting a little bit more performance out of them. You know, and what I find kind of amazing too is we wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't for lithium batteries.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I mean, 100%. Could you imagine having an AGM in your boat? Because you couldn't run a 50-amp AGM. You'd have to have a 100-amp-hour AGM because you can only run those down to like half roughly of them before you start wearing out the batteries. I couldn't imagine that. I mean, it'd be like another 100 pounds in my boat. It's already like borderline being too
yeah. cool.
I have a question about 360. That's something that I've had this year. And whenever you're – how are you using 360? Are you using it in combination with forward-facing? That's like where you – because it's something you're not really traveling a lot using. It's more like on a spot. But – how do y'all see how does 360 fit in for y'all into your game, I guess, or into your day?
You can go first, Casey.
So for me, 360, I honestly haven't used 360 a ton since I've got my live. Just for me, it's a lot more on the boat that I have to deal with. Like, I raise and lower it anytime I'm like moving spots and going any kind of distance. So most of the time I haven't used it, but there's certain things, types of fishing that if I know I'm going to be doing, I'm definitely going to bring it with me. It can see the bottom hardness, like slight contours in the bottom. You can like, you're very familiar with like side imaging. So you know how you can see like slight drop offs. You can see those bottom hardness changes. Like fishing brim beds is a huge thing. I feel like that the 360 really shines at. It just picks those up perfectly. You can really see them. Any kind of like rock veins that, you know, don't really stick up, those things are really gonna be highlighted on the 360. Whereas I feel like on live, they're not really seen as well.
Yeah. So I use mine a lot fishing rock fields and isolating out the biggest boulders within the field. That it just saves your time. So like you side scan it, you mark a couple boulders, you spin on it, you get set up on it, and then put that 360 in the water. And then I'm using that to then pan to it with my scope and really fine tune my casts and make sure I'm hitting the biggest boulder in that pile in 30, 40 feet of water most of the time, and see if there's fish on that boulder, at least make a couple casts on it and make sure that those 4 casts or 10 casts I'm making aren't going to hit that boulder every time, just cause I have it double lined up. And, that's really what I'm using it for is, rock pile fishing and individual isolated boulders. I do a lot of that where you graph in these big 40-foot flats and there's 3 big boulders out there. It can be tricky to refine them sometimes, but the 360 will show it to you and then you pan to it with your scope.
That's it's definitely helped me to where I think maybe I don't have the best spatial awareness of knowing, because I don't have one of those pucks, like the, you know, the pinpoint pucks to know exactly where I'm. It seems like the 360 has helped me target exactly where I want to be throwing. That's been like the thing I found, you know, like Casey's saying, hard spots. I'm hoping I'm able to find shell bars and things like that down in Florida for the Harris event, but like it's helped me find brush piles and things like that, maybe into pinpoint them better than what I did before, it seems like.
I even like it when I'm just rolling down the bank, chucking a crankbait or whatnot, And I just like to look down at it sometimes, and sometimes you'll just notice something small and you'll make a weird cast where you've been going down the bank and you see a stump and you make a weird cast and you catch that nice, better quality fish off that. And you can kind of start to put a puzzle together of a pattern just off something random you see when you're just cruising down the bank throwing a moving bait.
Cool.
You know, and that's how I felt like.
And the great thing about it.
Go ahead, Casey.
The great thing about that, too, is like it's like kind of what Jake was saying. It's you're seeing in front of you. You're not having to manipulate the live to be able to look in every direction. So like you're just kind of cruising on and looking in front of you and seeing kind of what's there. Although obviously it's not real time. It is pretty quick. So those stumps, those rocks, those lay downs that you can't see from the bank, you know, all that stuff as you're cruising down the bank, it's going to show up and you're going to see it before you get to it.
I feel like the forward facing sonar I use it like way more to position my cast than I do like throwing at a specific fish. Like, you know what I mean? Like Jake was saying, you're picking out the biggest boulders and you're using that forward facing sonar to make sure you're casting perfectly on top of them. I feel like I'm doing more stuff like that with it than I am seeing like going like, oh, look, there's one big fish and casting at. Now, I mean, I do that, but I feel like it's way more effective and I use it way more for pinpointing my casts and getting that perfect cast on structure and help me find my cast. Cause sometimes, you know, you come up to, let's say, a big pileup or a big root ball or something, and you don't necessarily want to hit it from the backside into all the small roots. You want to hit it from the trunk side, you know, so it helps me position and get that perfect cast to sneak it right into those little pockets. Are you guys using it like that, or are you guys using your forward-facing sonar to target individual fish?
I target a lot of individual fish. I'd say 80% of the time. When I'm using it, I'm watching the fish eat the bait.
So you're seeing them. You're like,
yeah,
20 feet out, right to that one fish. Are you bed fishing when you're doing this, or is this something?
No, offshore, suspended smallmouth, grouped up smallmouth, largemouth. I do a lot of smallmouth fishing, but I have done it with largemouth as well. Drop shots and the hover shots and damikis and all kinds of different stuff. A lot of spinning rod stuff. Or for largemouth, I really like flipping a jig to them. Like you'll see them 40 feet out and I'll just flip a jig right in front of their face and they'll go down to the bottom and just inhale it most times.
Yeah, you remind me of that dude, the main guy who just from the Bassmaster Open.
Tyler Williams.
Yeah. Yeah, y'all are like the same guy, New Hampshire, Maine.
Yeah, the fish up here ain't the brightest, I'll tell you that much.
We need some of those.
You guys do.
Yeah. So, Kurt, what kind of your battery setup, what did you say you were doing? Is yours?
I'm running a MillerTech lithium battery, a 55 amp hour battery for my setup.
And, so a single.
Yeah, just a single for it. I run 10 gauge up to my fuse, up to my turnoff, and then 10 gauge from my switch to my fuse block, which is like inches away from the switch. So it's all like real condensed right there. And then everything's connected to the fuse block directly with whatever gauge they come with. I didn't have to extend anything out to make it reach for that. You know, and this is something that a lot of people don't realize is voltage drop is like a really big issue, even in kayaks. Cause a lot of times I hear guys say, oh, well look at the gauge wire that it comes with. And you know, when you get the little pigtails coming off the, like a Garmin unit, it's tiny. I don't even know what gauge it is. 20 gauge maybe. I mean, it is tiny wire, but you can't run that for any length, you know? I mean, and the engineers realize that and they have it all planned out, but I see so many people not get that right.
Yeah, I mean, with the hummingbirds, it seems like they have, I don't know if it's like 12 foot or how long the power wire is that comes with the graphs, but you know, there's charts that will tell you like how many, like how many amps you're pulling and how many, like how big a wire you need to be using over different lengths to be able to keep up that voltage the whole way. But I think Hummingbird has their wire set for that, the length of it, you know? So if you hook directly to the battery with that wire, you should be fine. I don't like taking any chances, and I'll just cut it off and run at least a little bit bigger of a wire most of the way for that length. But I think generally what they come with, if you wire that directly to the battery, you should be fine.
Yeah, you figure those engineers like thought about that when they designed the unit, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, you would really think so. And I mean, if you go by that chart, it's all right. So, so yeah, but it's all a learning process. And like I said, it doesn't hurt to use bigger gauge wire, because is if you have a little bit bad of a connection, like say you soldered a little connector on, or you crimped something together and you don't have a great connection, you know, having that bigger wire, I just feel like is going to help you out with any imperfections that you may have.
So are y'all soldering everything, like all three of y'all? No, I was like, man, I've never soldered anything in my damn life. I'm glad at least Jake doesn't do it either.
I mean, I solder a lot of my stuff. A lot of my, I crimp them and then I'll solder them to make sure, like as like a backup, to make sure everything's connected like crazy well. Because I absolutely hate having electronic problems on the water. Like it just drives me. Because you can't do anything about it. I mean, you know, I'm not bringing a wire stripper with me on the water. I'm not bringing a crimper with me on the water. So if I have a problem, it just, so I'll crimp a lot of things and then I'll solder them. But I have let that go a little bit and have begun to trust crimping stuff. With a better, how should I say this? I bought a better quality crimper, so I am beginning to trust it now a lot more than I did when I was just using a pair of pliers. I'm like, oh, okay, this is gonna, yeah, that's crimped, you know. And then of course I had a problem.
Did so you get I'm beginning the ratcheting? To
trust the crimps more.
Did you get the ratcheting crimper?
I did.
No, I have that one.
It's awesome, man. Because if you can't get it quite, you know, that first go, you can really get both hands on it and really smash it down.
Yeah.
My buddy Chuck turned me on.
Yeah, I bought one of those.
That use the, they're like the solder connectors where you use a lighter and then it heats up. And
yeah,
like I use those, but I can imagine if my dad was rigging it, he would have the soldering iron out and, you know, he'd be going at it for real.
Yeah, I'm not great at soldering. I mean, I can do enough to stick two wires together most of the time, but I don't prep it properly and do all the stuff that I think you really need to do to get a perfect connection and not get any kind of voltage drop through there. But yeah, I had bought the ratcheting crimpers that, I don't know if it's the same ones, but the pair that I got didn't work too well. But I did go and buy, I think it's from Harbor Freight. It's a hydraulic crimper, and it goes all the way down to size like 12 gauge wire, I think, or maybe even 10. And you can't do anything smaller than that with it, but you can go up to like one-aught wires and crimp them together. And man, I'll tell you, that thing makes a solid connection. I really am happy about that purchase.
So you're doing that for your batteries for your motor too then, right?
No, pretty much. I mean, everything with the motor and stuff, everything just comes, it's all plug and play already.
Oh, so it's
totally all, like it's got the terminals. Yeah. It's all pre-wired. It's got a battery box. You just put your battery in the battery box and send it. But I do keep a spare battery a lot of times. So I'll extend the plug on that. And yeah, I'll have to crimp those wires that where I extended it so it can reach to the plug without having to move anything. But yeah, other than that, the kayak comes ready to go.
Jake, are you crimping everything then, all your connections?
No, everything that goes into the power harness is, they're these little blocks and they have a whole a hole drilled into the block, and then you tighten it down with an Allen key, and then there's a sleeve that you put over your wire. So you put a sleeve over your wire, you push it in, and then you tighten it down with an Allen key, and it makes like the strongest connections because you're tightening it down and it's compressing that in there, and then it holds it rock solid in there.
Where'd you get these blocks at, man? I am
Bass Fishing Electronics makes them, but he doesn't sell them to the public.
So you got to know somebody to get them.
Yeah. He sells them in his whole harness. If you buy the harness from him, they're in the harness, but he doesn't sell them individually.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but they're the best. They're great.
So if I guess we'll take it back for the people that are just getting into kayak fishing or they've never had electronics at all. If what would you suggest for somebody if they're going to get their first unit? Like which one do you think is the most valuable that if you can only have one, what would it be?
I would when I ran a single unit, I ran a Lowrance HDS Live 9, and it had my side scan on it, and it had active target on it, and that's what I started with when I got into the forward facing stuff. Just something that you can build with. So if you don't want to spend the money on forward facing yet, start with just the unit, learn the side scan, learn the down scan, learn the mapping, and then later on you can upgrade to it. Don't buy a unit that's not compatible with forward facing, because then in the long run, you're just going to have to buy a brand new unit later down the road.
Yeah. I mean, for Hummingbird, I think that the 9-inch Helix, that's just, it's, I think it's, you're getting the best screen for your money. You know, it's, I mean, a 9 sounds big for a lot of people, but there's so many people out here running 12s and, you know, even bigger on kayaks. But I really think that's priced at a good point for somebody to get started with. I mean, they make the 8 and then the 7 as well. The 7's fine if you're on a really tight budget. But I'd go at least that 8 or 9 inch. You know, they have all the capabilities. They have the side imaging, the down imaging, maps, and they're ready for Mega Live and 360. So, I mean, like Jake was saying, you're setting yourself up to upgrade in the future if that's the steps you want to go. But I definitely recommend that side imaging. I mean, for me, it completely changed the way I fish. And it helped me out so much once I actually learned it and got good with it.
This year, I added a second one. I bought two new graphs. I have the new Garmin 93 SV UHD2 with the GT56 transducer and the Gen 4 Helix 9. I'm really surprised, like, side by side, how different they are. Like, just how they're made is so much different. If Jake, you have all three. I mean, you know how different they are, but it's like, just the dimensions are different, the thickness. It seems like, you know, like a computer, all laptops are the same. I mean, they're all pretty dang close. Graphs, they're like different weights. Yeah. You know, the Garmin, you the back of it, you just put your screen on there, it stays on there. When Hummingbird, the whole unit comes off. It is really crazy in comparison how different the technology has come between the different brands.
And then the mapping in all the different units too. I can't tell you the amount of times I've gone to Lake Master and seen something that's completely not on my Navionics mapping, and I catch a couple key fish off that little hump that you can see on Lake Master. Lake Master is great. I really enjoy Lake Master. It's got some really good stuff, and I find some really key stuff that a lot of people aren't seeing, just because you can't see it on the Garmin or the Lowrance mapping chips. And it's a game changer that on certain lakes. They don't have all the lakes on there. They have a lot of the bigger lakes, at least up north. They don't have a lot of the smaller lakes.
Yeah,
I do miss my Lake Master. I ain't gonna lie.
You can get the
that's one of the big,
You can what? What'd you say?
The new phone app from Humminbird.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's real good stuff.
Oh.
Casey probably has it. Probably doesn't want to talk about it because it's so good.
It's amazing. I mean, like, I feel like especially for us kayak anglers, I mean, we're always looking at the map. Like I tell you, before our tournament, I'm sitting there scrolling around the area I'm going to fish, just trying to look at every single detail. And I mean, I'll lay in bed at night, you know, before the tournament, looking at it and, you know, doing your research beforehand. It's just the maps are great. I mean, obviously there's some lakes that they don't have, you know, in certain areas, but I mean, they have all the major lakes for the most part. Most of them are really good. There's some that I've been to that aren't great, but for the most part, it's unbeatable. But I mean, if you are using mapping, I mean, using them all, trying to utilize every source you can get to just to make sure you know everything about that. And if you see something unique on one map, you know, go check it out, because that may be the deal that not many people are seeing.
Yeah. Is there a way to take them? This might be a dumb question. I have the Lake Master maps. Is there a way to take that and put it on your phone? Like, or do you have to pay two different subscriptions for it? Like you know, you buy the Lake Master for your graph. Do you get the app on your phone for free whenever you do that?
I think you get the section. I think you can get the section, right? Am I correct on that, Casey?
You know, I'm not 100% sure on exactly how it works. I think if you, I don't want to say anything wrong. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but I think it'll give you a code or something to download it. I don't know.
Yeah, I bought a couple of maps on the app prior, like Seminole. I know I think Gunnersville I bought a couple of them before, it seems like, and then I bought Lake Master, and I haven't been on the app since then, but I don't know. I need to check it out. That's on me.
I was just looking to see if I can pull it up real quick.
Yeah, it's legit. It's funny. I'm old enough. I remember using paper maps and then I went to the old, it's funny how even the old paper maps, or I had like older chip cards that they had some ditches and things that even the new ones didn't have, until now it's kind of went far enough that everything's so good. But there was a gap in between where you could still find stuff on paper maps or like older chip cards. But now it's like, you might as well give up that paper map. It's Lake Master and everything else so good. See maps or, yeah.
And you're down to like, a lot of these things are down to 1 foot increments for the contour line. So as long as those things are accurate, man, I mean, 1 foot, that's like, you can see everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's still something to be said about using the paper maps, laying them out on a table, seeing it all at once, rather than having to like scroll around and then. But I mean, obviously the phone is the best, I think, but or the new maps on the graph or on the phone, but having a paper map is nice. I still think too, you know, I think it helps you break down the whole lake if you're trying to look at it real quick, you know, really, really key in on a certain area quicker than it is just like scrolling around on the phone or on your graph.
Yeah. Or you can just fold up the paper map and look at a smaller section of it so you don't get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I will say the one thing I don't like about my Humminbird is I have to, like, my kayak, I can't get service for my Lake Master in my garage because, like, two floors above me. So I have to take the kayak outside or something if I want a Lake Master on my from my kayak.
Yeah.
Same thing for Garmin, man. If you don't have service, you can't update your Garmin. You can't use the active captain at all. You know, like when I'm in my garage, I have to like I make sure I actually open my garage door because for whatever reason, I get just a little bit better signal in my garage then. And that's when I update it. But, and right now it's freezing though. So now I don't want to even go out there and mess with it because it's so cold.
Yeah, what I do is I buy the extra power cables for my graphs, and then I can bring them inside and sit down on the kitchen table and just plug it into like a little 10 amp hour because I'm not going to be using it long, and just do all my updates right there instead of having to put them all onto the boat and try to update them that way. Just a power cable. And
That's the pro tip right there.
Yep.
I never thought about that.
Exact this whole show. Yes. I've got something from the show. I am, hell yeah, I am doing that for sure. That's a great idea.
Just put two little push-on terminals and a little battery and just bring it inside.
Oh, yeah, that's happening.
Yeah.
So whenever y'all see other people's electronic setups, what do some people miss that maybe they're missing the boat on, or they're not quite getting everything they can out of their equipment? What's a common problems that y'all see in other people's setups?
I think one thing I see a lot is people's side scan transducers not being level and keeping them as level as possible so you're not missing anything. And then I also see some people making live scope pulls, and in the long run, they don't really work. They don't really stay in the water. And you're investing all this money into forward-facing sonar, the unit, the batteries, and then the cheap out on the pole in the long run. It's just something that I think people overlook, is that that's the most important thing you have, and a good pole goes a long way.
You and Casey both run the Sniper, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that like the deal?
Yeah, it's definitely the way to go. I mean, it's got I don't know how familiar y'all are with it, but having the throttle style handle on it, so you can just, you know, turn your wrist and it turns the transducer. You don't have a ton of movements. You're not having to rotate the whole thing all the way around. It's just you can really get it quickly dialed in to exactly where you want to get it. And I mean, it's just a solid pole for it. I mean, like when I first, kind of like Jake was just saying, when I first got into, started using the live, I was trying to, you know, DIY a pole and everything, 'cause I didn't want to spend the money, to mount it. So I did it as cheap as possible with parts I had laying around. I was like, oh, this is going to work. And I get out there and the thing's just super flimsy. You know, it's not, you know, nothing was right about it. And like immediately I just decided, I was like, I got to go spend some money and get this thing solid. And, you know, that Sniper pole was definitely the way to go.
Yeah. I've tried two others in the past, and one of them was okay, but the big thing is that reach out around the kayak to get that pole to be spun around every single time, and you're like kind of bent over leaning on your kayak. It's just asking to go in, and especially when you let go out here and you're kind of moving, it would just spin back every time, and then a lot of times it's more frustrating. But with that Sniper pole, it's just locked in. I can just cruise, use that throttle, and just stay right on top of them the whole time. It's a good mount. I really enjoy it.
I've been eyeballing it.
Yeah.
Would you be able to put a second transducer on that one?
Yeah. I don't think you could. No.
Because it just rotates from the bottom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think you could get the second cord to go down through it.
Yeah, you wouldn't. You'd have to have the cord exterior.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because it's just like, from what I understand, there's just enough room to get the cord to go through, right?
Yeah, you got to cut off the plastic collar on the active target and on the Garmin, and then they send you the collar that clips back around once you run it through.
How about
you could still rig it up if you wanted to.
Yeah You just run it on the outside.
Is
there any kind of mounts or mounting that y'all I mean, everybody makes different stuff. Sniper, talked about catch in the beginning. I mean, I know the dugout makes some, and now Railblazer has some. Ram, some of the best gear ever. Is there certain mounts, like if you can give some advice as far as which mounts are kind of a step above others, is there anything y'all would recommend?
I know that new catch mount looks pretty impressive. I'm definitely going to get one of those. I want to try that out. I have mine mounted up onto some starboard that goes across my boat with some stiffening plates behind it. And I just drill the gimbals right into that. Works fine for me. I ran the Yak Attack stuff. I found the Yak Attack stuff to be a little wobbly. And then I've used the Ram stuff too. The Ram stuff's pretty rock solid. But you do have to go to that bigger ball size, I think, on the Ram stuff. I think
I've broken a 1-inch before.
Yeah. I think it's the D-ball. The D-ball, I think, is the big, big one. And I know a lot of people really like that one.
Not just the big one, but the big, big one, right?
Yeah, it's the most rock solid one. You can run a C-ball, but I think the D-ball is where it's at.
Yeah, the C is what I ran all last year. I mean, I was running the 10-inch Helix on it. I never really had any issues. Okay. I did break one, but that was because I just tightened it down one time way too hard. But I've used that for 2 or 3 years now and been really happy with it with those Helixes. They don't recommend using the 10s on those, but
yeah,
like on a boat, I don't think it would work at all. On a kayak, you don't have as much. You're not bouncing around as much. I think it works fine. When I switched to the Solixes this year and went with a 12, the actual frame of the 12 is the same as the 10, maybe a slightly bit bigger, but it's a lot heavier. So I did decide to go to the D mount this year. And I mean, yeah, those things, like you tighten those things down, no. Man, it's not moving. So, no. I'll be happy to use that this year and see how that works out. But they're a lot bigger. Like, that's the one thing why I never did go to it, just because of how big they are. But they're solid for sure.
Seems like everyone's building that. I'm not even sure what you call it. The front mount for the two fish finders that kind of goes across and bridges across. You know, I tell you, Dugout has, I think, one of the cleanest looking ones that I've seen this year that they came out with. And it's just bent aluminum, but it's just like, it's just so simple and like elegant, you know. I don't know. I'm one of those guys who's like form before function, and it's just like so simple and so straightforward. It's just something about how simple it is, you know. There's like nothing to it, you know. But yeah, it holds two big giant units, no problem, and you can mount them. You can mount different things to it different ways.
I thought about getting that one, but I have like the dumbest trailer in the history of trailers. One of those Yakima ones where the top bars are so low, I have to put my graphs down. I've taken it off. I had a rod box on there. I took that off, and now I took the two top bars off just so I can not have that problem anymore. Because I've tried 20 different people to build me risers to rise up the second the upper bars, and nobody would. Nobody wanted nobody, in case something happened, nobody wanted the liability of making them for me. But they, so I have to have something where my graphs can come down, or I would have that mount. Because that Hobie one, and although it's good, and I have the Tim Percy mounts, like I've broken that bar, like it's come out of the hinges it sits in, because I've done them up and down so much. Yeah, I'm not bad, but just like it rotates a little sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I hit a big wave and it moves just a little bit more than what I want it to. I mean, it works. I'm not complaining, but yeah, that dugout one, I'd love to have it. I just can't do it with my setup. Speaking of, if anybody wants to buy a trailer, let me know. Great trailer. Independent suspension is a deal, but yeah, those whoever invented that with the top bars, putting them so low, I hope they got fired over that.
Just 6 inches, man. I've seen those too, man. Just like 6 inches would make a difference.
Yeah, just so close. All right. So anything else? I'll quit complaining about my trailer.
So what do you guys feel like is going to be the next big thing for fish finders on kayaks?
I was going to say that because it seems like some people are going, like Jamie at the dugout. He went from, I've seen people go nines, and Christine, Jamie, these other people, they're getting the big 16. Saw a guy the other day out in California with a Titan. He has a 19. So
yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah. A 19.
I think we're going to see some of those, the NBT 22 destroyers getting thrown on some kayaks.
Really?
Yeah.
How does that even work? Do you keep the graph? It's like somewhere else. I don't understand how that works.
It's like the screen is you pushing the data onto the big screen off of the smaller screen. So they're cool. They're huge. But I don't know. I actually put one on my yak, but
I saw Seth Fire had one.
Yeah, he just put one on. A lot of the pros are putting them on.
It makes sense to me. Like on a bass boat, it totally makes sense. You know what I mean? Because especially if you don't have it like raised up, you know what I mean? You got a little farther away. You want the bigger screen, especially for forward facing sonar stuff. But on a kayak, I feel like that would be a little ridiculous.
It would be. But
I mean, cool. Not that it wouldn't be cool, but it would be a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
Hey, so were 10 and 12 inch graphs, you know, 6 years ago on kayaks. So who knows where it's going to go.
3 years ago.
I remember, I don't know when I did it, but it's probably been four or five years, I guess, when I got the, maybe not even, maybe you're right, maybe it was just 4 years, but I got the Helix 10, and I was like one of the first people to have a 10-inch graph on a kayak. And like, you know, I felt like I was doing something. Then the next year you start seeing everybody's got the nines and tens, and then, you know, and then just like two graphs, three graphs, like it's crazy how much it's progressing. And I said it was you, Kurt, that's running two forward facing transducers now, isn't it, right? And isn't that what you said?
Yep.
Yeah, I really think like that's gonna start being the next level, because having, you know, I don't know what all the brands call it, but having both, you know, the straightforward facing and then the like seeing the horizon with that live, is having both of those at the same time is going to be the next step, I think, for a lot of people.
I think we're also going to see some motorized pole mounts coming down the line, so that you could stand up and run a motorized pole mount off the side of your kayak with your foot. I think that could be a big deal.
Yeah.
So that when you're standing, because it's pretty hard to work a jerkbait sitting down in a kayak. So being able to stand up and adjust that, your like a turret head system to stay on your bait. Because I know it's hard when you're sitting down in a kayak cracking a jerkbait and you're twisting the sniper pole. It's a little bit easier, but it's tough. So I think we might see some independent motorized poles starting to get thrown onto kayaks sooner than later.
There's a couple companies making
it. Yeah, so
kayak yet.
Yeah, I think it was the Greg DePalma put one on his.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So Humminbird has the target lock. Mm-hmm. One of the guys on the Old Town team, I guess last year or the year before, right when it came out, he got it and put it on his autopilot.
I saw.
He ran that all last year. It's definitely pretty cool, man. I was gonna do it, and I kind of just backed out of it just because it's heavy and it's a lot for a kayak. There's definitely other manufacturers, I think, that are making the same thing that's a little bit smaller profile, that may be a better fit for a kayak. But yeah, I mean, you're definitely right about that. That's definitely gonna be part of the next step as well.
Yeah, it's just another thing to power and another thing to break. At least with like the poles, there's not a lot to break on them, so like you're not going to get stuck with a broken part or fried up motor. I've heard some nightmare stories from those turrets, but I've heard a lot of them are phenomenal. So
I really want to see, like, I want to see where I can put the, whenever I have a motor, trolling motor, I would go to bow mount if I could put a forward facing sonar and like the 360, put it all on there and all just be one setup, so I don't have to do it over to the side or anything else. Like that's my dream. Whenever that happens, because last year I had forward facing sonar and this year I got rid of that, got a new unit. Now I have 360 because I can just put it down whenever I want it. Like it's, I hate having something over to the side. It sucks. I hate moving something. Like I just want the motor to have everything on there. When can we do this? Old Town, anybody, come on, please. That's what I want. Make the rigging simple and clean.
Yeah, it's going
to be. I mean, it's definitely, I don't think that's necessarily impossible, but that's starting to add a ton of weight up front. I mean, I've seen a lot of kayaks that people put bow mounts on, and just the bow mount alone's got the kayak, you know, sitting like this in the water. So, I mean, it's definitely something that I think can be done. The kayak's just going to have to be designed a little bit more around that. You know, maybe put your battery all the way in the back, or you know, whatever it is. But yeah, I was going to say too, I forgot to tell y'all. I got the two motors that I run the dual power poles on the back. So I went ahead and installed the what are they calling them? The crappie brakes on the back of those too. So I got two motors back there too. No, just joking.
I was about to say that, man, it'd be awesome.
Have y'all seen that though? I mean, feel like everybody's been talking about it recently. That's kind of crazy to me.
Someone's going to be using a Torquedo with an XR3, and that's what I was thinking about it, but it's just too much to work with.
What do they do? I don't understand them.
It brings you back away from the fish without having to blow them out with your trolling motor and lose them on the front. So, like, when you're running a foot pedal, you can stay on them, and then you hit another foot pedal, and it backs you away from them. I think it's cool. But you see a lot of the guys up north do the drift paddles. Same idea. Yeah. It slows you down.
Huh. Where does the pedal go? Just off to the side of where they have their trolling motor now?
Yeah. It's like a stomp pedal, just like the power pole ones.
So it's just like on off, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. They got some switches and everything crazy up front. Yeah. It's getting, it'd be hard to maneuver up there. So if y'all had to say is there anything that you don't have that you wish you had? It sounds like all three of y'all setups are, you know, where you want it. Is there like one missing part, or if you could just spend all the money, is there something else you would have?
I think I got mine pretty set up real perfect, right where I like it. Got a little bit of everything and it runs good. I have no problems with my setup right now. I've been working up to it for a while, adding a graph every year, adding a 360, went from active target to live scope.
The only thing I would change is I'd have a 17 foot autopilot with a 36 volt trolling motor. But I mean, other than that, man, it's that kayak's badass. I mean, the way I've got it rigged just works for me, you know, and that's really what matters, as long as, you know, you got it set up the way you want. And that's what's great about this whole thing, man. Like, you can set up the kayaks however you want, and obviously we've pushed the limits over the past few years of what you can do, and we're going to continue to push it and just but yeah, man, I mean, everything's been working great for me, so hopefully we can put it to work coming up this year and cash some checks.
That's right. Kurt, how about you? Would you add anything else? Seems like you're pretty got it where you want it.
Yeah. It comes down to we're on kayaks and there's only room, right? And I don't want to say I feel cramped on my kayak now, because I don't, but I feel like if I took up any more real estate, where I fit, because, you know, I'd like to fish off the front, right? So I can't have a fish finder in the very front of me. I need them to be on the side, because that's how I like to fish, like right off the front of the kayak. So yeah, I don't feel like I could, you know, if magically I could have more room, I would like to add like a hummingbird get the 360, get the Lake Master back on there. That'd be great. But I mean, it's just the lack of real estate to put that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just glad I don't have a bass boat because I would be out of control with it, man. I'd be way out of control with it.
And you really have to be careful putting all this stuff on there, like whether it's all weight on one side or I know me just putting a second graph up front this year and I went from a 20 amp to a 50 amp. Like I can feel the performance difference in the front of my kayak. It's in my Hobie. It's just, you know, that extra weight makes a difference.
You also lose a lot of speed. I will say that with all the stuff in the water, you're going to lose a lot of speed. So being the ability to pull them up and get them out of the water for when you're making those long, long runs, I think super crucial. And then putting them down when you get to the spot, you want to start looking.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you lose over a mile an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Easy over a mile an hour having that stuff in the water.
What speeds are y'all getting?
With it down in the water? With it in the water?
I mean, I guess up. I mean, you know, with everything pulled up, what are y'all getting? I'm just curious, like, if you have all these electronics and the weight of it, is there something you're giving? If you're talking about speed, even if you do pull them up, are you losing? Have you lost a bunch of speed that you don't mind losing, or is it getting close to that limit of I don't want to give up any more just to not lose any more speed?
I'm getting like 4 with everything pulled up, and I'll get like 3-2 with everything down, depending on the prop I'm running on my XI3. Yeah,
I'm getting about the same. The autopilot goes right around 4 miles per hour, give or take, and then with the live down, I'm getting like 3.5. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what I'm getting when I have the live and the 360 down, but I don't think I lose too much more than that. But definitely probably right around what Jake said, probably about the 3.2, 3.3, you know.
Yeah. And Kurt, do you have the big Torquedo or the small one?
Yeah, I got the 1103. I get about 6 miles an hour with everything up, right? But as soon as I put that arm down, it's like 5, and I can't even run it that fast with the arm in the water, honestly, because it starts janking the arm. It starts putting too much pressure on the arm and really starts messing with the mechanism. So if I'm running any of those higher speeds, like up to like 3 miles an hour, I can run it in the water. But it's like even then I got to like counter steer for it because there's 2 transducers on it. Things like trying to steer my kayak off to the left constantly.
Do you?
Yeah, I have the NK180. My top speed's 5, and I lose about a half a mile an hour with the 360 down. So, but I'm not, again, like you said, I'm not usually running at top speed, even though it's only 5. I'm not running at top speed whenever I have 360 down. I'm usually making a short run.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Do you find scoping with the Torquedo harder? Have you tried scoping with a bow mount before?
No, I haven't. I have not tried scoping with a bow mount.
Yeah, I know. I tried scoping with a Torquedo, and it was a struggle. Yeah.
Like, were you trying to run and scope out an area?
I was trying to chase them. Like, you see them out like 120 feet, and I'm trying to get them into that like 60-foot zone, trying to use the like foot control steering system, and it just wasn't for me. Now that's just the river boat with no electronics on it.
And so for me, when I'm doing that action, I don't use my Torquedo at all. I'll use my Mirage Drive.
Okay, you're using pedals. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm using pedals, so I'm able to close that type of distance. Like I can close 60 feet, you know, relatively easily.
Yeah.
Now, if you're talking like a much longer distance, no, I'm not gonna be able to chase something down that's super far away.
Yeah,
but that's, you know, that's the beauty for me when I get into an area is I just go to the foot pedals and then I'm just looking for them. I do that a lot on the Ohio River for white bass and hybrids and stuff.
Yeah,
because they're prolific movers, right? They'll school up in an area and then they'll all decide to move at once and
you gotta chase them.
Yeah.
I wish I had the space and the money, the space in my garage and the money to have a third bow mount or autopilot kayak. That's like, I wouldn't have more stuff. I would just have a different kayak. Cause where I fish, the Hobie is so versatile. Like I take it way up into creeks and I fish lakes, but I wish I could have that third boat. That would be to really, go crazy with the electronics. That would be awesome.
That's the one thing I like about my new canoe is I can just change stuff over. I can slap a bow mount on it. I can put a torpedo on it. If I really want to, I can put a drive system onto it and I can really change it up for what I'm going to be doing that tournament and even bring both with me. So if I know I'm going to be fishing offshore one day and practice and then going up a creek the next day at that night, just slap a torpedo or the Newport systems onto mine and just go.
Heck yeah.
Super versatile boat.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been over an hour. We don't want to keep you any longer. Appreciate y'all. I know both y'all are on East Coast time, so thank you for staying up with us. Appreciate it. And good luck this year. If we don't talk to you before then, good luck out on the trails and hope y'all wear them out.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks. Appreciate you guys. Good talking with y'all.
Yeah, man. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll see y'all next week.